Welcome to the experience.
Left channel. Right channel.
Welcome to the experience.
Left channel. Right channel.
Hello, everybody. This is Mark, and welcome back to the Candle Shore podcast. This is show number 4. The subject of today's show is been the subject of a couple of conversations I've had during the last couple of weeks, and it's something I've had dealt with other people. And so I was thinking about it today when I was determining what I wanted to talk about. And the subject is suicide. Now, before I go any further, let me give you a disclaimer. Let me just say this. The things I'm about to discuss, I want you to know that I'm not attempting to pass judgment on anyone. And I'm certainly not trying to, or I don't want to get into the areas of people who choose to end their life or want to end their life because of terminal illness. I don't want to talk about, or I'm not certainly addressing the current pending legislation about the rights of people who wish to end their lives. What I'm referring to here are, and I hate to use this word, but what can I say, just general citizens who think about or want to commit suicide. This is what I'm referring to. So I don't want you to think I'm passing or statements refer to any of the extreme cases with regards to the subject. Have you ever thought about suicide? If you ask people, most people I've asked that question, although I don't exactly make it a regular question, I assure you. I ask, and I go, oh no, absolutely not, and I would never consider such a thing. And before 2001, I believe it was January 11th of 2001, I probably would have said the same thing. On January 2011, I began to experience headaches, and it was a pretty long day. I remember it being a very, very long day. And I experienced seeing some flashing lights, not lights, but flashing impulses in my field of vision. And for those of you who don't know, I was born legally blind, but I guess it's how do you measure how well someone can see? I could not see and have never been able to see well enough to drive a car or read normal size, that is to say, 8 to 14 size print, font size and print. But well enough, I saw well enough to walk without a cane, enjoy movies and television at a distance, things like that. Anyway, so around 9 o'clock or so, I had a very bad headache on January 11th. And on the next day when I woke up, it felt as though I had been asleep for a very long time. I woke up, opened my eyes, and I thought it was still night because it was so dark. It's very, very dark. And I found out what time it was and couldn't believe that it was 8 o'clock in the morning. And the windows, the blinds were open, so the sun should have been shining in, but I still couldn't see. And I couldn't believe it. I was absolutely scared. I was alone in the house. And I'm speaking very slowly because I want to really get this clear. As you've seen from previous shows, when I get excited, I start to stutter, and I don't want to do that here. Anyway, I called the doctor, and I was very fortunate to have a pretty good relationship with my ophthalmologist. And by the way, I've always had glaucoma, so I explained to him. I said, "Look, I can barely see anything; it's very dark," and he thought that it was a broken blood vessel. So he said, "Look, you know, tomorrow I'll come in." This was on a weekend, so for those of you who want to go back and check the date, I gave you January 11th or 12th, but it was a Friday and Saturday that these two events happened. I woke up on Saturday morning. Anyway, he said, "I'll come in tomorrow, Sunday. I'll be back in town. Come into the office, and we'll take a look." And for the rest of that day, I could see just a little bit, but just hardly anything at all. And I spent the whole day rubbing my eyes, or not rubbing them hard, but, you know, trying to blink and do anything. And I really did think it was a broken blood vessel. Well, anyway, the next day, when I woke up, I couldn't see anything at all. Absolutely nothing. Went to the doctor's office. And I truly thought he would be able to solve the problem. And it was around 10 o'clock in the morning. And he's showing lights and shining lights into my eyes, and I could feel the heat from the light, but certainly I could not see. And he said the one thing I truly did not expect him to say. He said, "I have no idea what's wrong." And to say that my reality slipped away would be an understatement. I'm going to make a long story short. The next day, which was a Monday, he sent me to a retina specialist, and the retina specialist says, "It looks like I can't see your retina, so it most likely your retinas have detached." And of course, I wanted to. He said, "Well, we can go into surgery tonight, and I can try to repair your retinas tonight, but most likely it will fail, because there's a lot of swelling, and you clearly have some kind of an infection. We don't know what caused it, but you need to wait at least 2 weeks." And I begged him, literally, "Please let's make the attempt tonight." He said, "I'll do it if you really, really, really insist, but the odds of having your vision, any vision restored at all, is virtually none if we don't wait for swelling to go down, because if your retina comes off a second time, that's it." So, I waited, and for 2 weeks, I could not see anything at all. And I want you to know that he made no promise that even after the surgery that it would work. So, now, having said all this, I want you to know that a good buddy of mine, I've known him for many, many years, I think we found out that I've known him for coming up on 18 to 20 years now. We had always had an agreement. And we used to go out to the clubs or go out to dinner and everything, and would say, "If anything ever happens to me, you know, that's it. I'm done. I'm out of here. I'm, you know, final exit, suicide." And we both agreed, you know, we just said, "That's it." And I remember thinking during the week, that first week, that this was it. I mean, this was, it all came, and I was, I think I just turned 34 or 33. I can't remember now. If I did the math, I guess I could, but anyway. Maybe 34. But anyway, I remember thinking, okay, this is it. We always said if something tragic happened, you know. Now, for those of you who have always had, you know, who figure, well, let me try this again. For those of you who have never had any physical challenges to mention, you may think, well, you know, you couldn't see that well to start with, so what's a little more loss? But I want you to know that compared to any vision compared to no vision, certainly at the level where I went from to, in a matter of hours, it was traumatic. So just, there's no way I can explain it to you. I guess it's almost like this. If you have $100, and you lose $90, so you only have 10. To you, that's a lot of money, especially if that's all the money that you've got. Now, if you're a millionaire looking at a person with $100, you might think, well, you can't do anything with $100, so what's $90? To a millionaire, that distance from 100 to 10 is very small. But to the person who only has that $100, that's all they have, and you lose 90% of it, it's a huge thing, okay? Maybe that can get the point across to you a little bit. So this takes us back to suicide. I was absolutely convinced that I was going to commit suicide simply for the fact that I could not believe, I did not want to go continue with no vision, totally blind. It just wasn't going to happen. And people say, oh, you know, you can do this, you're smart, you're resilient, you can come back. And while that may have all been true, I simply did not want to do it. It's like, you know, again, born legally blind, 34 years of struggling, and now another, a blow. It seems so unfair. I'm not a bad person, and I think we as humans like to try to bring meaning to things that happen to us, and I couldn't figure out what I had done to warrant such a punishment. Not that it was a punishment, but at that time I was thinking, what have I done? So, the next thing I thought is, great, I'm going to go. I'm going to do this, and I can't see enough to even end it properly. I'm really thinking, gee, I should have, you know, I've always been one of these people who plan for everything. Those of you who know me know I like to have backup upon backup, you know, contingency plans A, B, C, everything. And I had not planned for this. I had a lot of financial planning in terms of backups, but not this. So it felt like I had waited too long to do anything. And, you know, you can't exactly call up a taxi and say, I can't see, but I need you to drive me to the Golden Gate Bridge so I can jump off of it. It just doesn't work. You know what I mean? So anyway. So suicide then became the only option because I simply did not want to continue. Now, three things came up. One, I decided that if I were going to do it, I didn't want to do it in a bad way. You know, a gunshot or some violent way that I think is very cruel to people who find you. The other thing is I have two cats, Rosalie and Amy. And for those of you who don't like cats or don't have pets, you may not understand this, but and I don't have children. And I know that those of you who have children say, what's a life of an animal compared to a child when you don't have kids? But to a person who doesn't have any children, Rosalie and Amy mean a great deal to me. And I remember thinking, if I go, who's going to take care of them? Now, I'm very blessed to have a lot of good friends who love cats. But I don't think they take care of Rosalie and Amy the way I think they deserve to be taken care of. Now, that doesn't mean I make Rosalie and Amy breakfast. In fact, a lot of people, when they see me with my cats, think, gee, you don't really like them very much because I don't coddle them and coo and woo and all this stuff. But I do love them dearly. And I remember thinking, who's going to take care of them? And then also, this is going to sound really ridiculous, but I actually like my name, Mark. And I kept thinking, you know, if there is such a thing as reincarnation, I don't want to come back with a name like Tyrone or something. Not that there's anything wrong with a name like Tyrone. I just probably offended about 1,000 people, but anyway, I really like my name. I didn't want to give it up. But what I decided to do is, and I've thought about this a lot, I decided to, if I felt the same, because I told a few people that would not give me, you know, when you tell somebody, look, I want you to know this so you don't, you're not surprised. I want you to know that I'm going to be ending my life in a very short time. You know, obviously, you get a standard response. You know, your life's worth saving. It's not over, you know. And when you have someone who has no disability, no physical challenge, telling someone who's just lost what little vision they had, I'm telling you, their words don't mean much, okay? I remember thinking, step in my shoes for about an hour. Don't just put a blindfold on so you can pretend, because those of you who put on blindfolds, you don't know what it's like. You can always take that blindfold off, so you don't really know. I know a lot of times, I'm going to digress just a little bit here. I know people, when they have little children in school, they want them to have more empathy for blind people, low vision people, so they put these blindfolds on them, and they honestly think that gives them an idea. And it would, but for the fact that they can always take them off, and the children know that. So I think it's just, I think it's a pointless exercise. There you go. Okay, so getting back to where I was going. But I did, the one thing I decided is, I'll give this 5 months. I remember thinking five, and I don't know why 5 months. It was January. My birthday's in February, so that would have put it at April, maybe, or April, May. I'm not good at dates, so maybe June. I remember thinking, I'll give it 5 months. And if I feel this way in 5 months, that's it. And I also remember thinking, in 5 months, I'm going to figure out how to do this correctly, because I didn't want to, you know, you don't want to mess it up. Okay, so the reason I tell you this story is so you understand that I have an intimate understanding of the desire and the need and the sense of rightness about committing suicide under certain conditions. I want to tell you that, and this is true even when I, let me give you the, by the way, I did have the surgery, and some of my vision was restored. It was, I lost a lot of peripheral vision, but I can once again watch television and movies. I see well enough to, I have good mobility. I do, in the old days before 2001, I could comfortably walk down the street, and I didn't really feel a need to use a cane to cross the street. I do use an identifying cane now because I lost so much peripheral vision that I can't always see who's left and right. So I can still see the traffic lights, and I'm comfortable crossing the street in that sense. But because of the limitations that I have, it's very important that everyone knows that I cannot see or see well. So whenever I travel alone, I do carry a cane. But I'm very fortunate. I can see the sun and really enjoy. I have color. See, so I can see. You know, it's hard to put a value on it. But I'd say they probably covered maybe 80% of what vision I had. And so I feel very blessed. Okay, so I wanted to finish that up. But anyway, getting back to what I was saying. I want to state that even during that traumatic period for me, my position on suicide is basically that it is wrong, and not for religious reasons or moral reasons, but because to me it doesn't solve any problems, and more importantly, and this is a big one, and I truly felt this way at the time. I'm not just giving you, you know, armchair quarterbacking after the fact. I really believe this then too, is that it robs the world, and I mean a bit grandiose, it robs the world of your influence. It robs others of your influence. And that is a tragedy. And it is also very, very selfish to do that. I really do believe that I am my brother's keeper. I believe that we should all be our brothers and sisters' keepers. I think that others should matter to us more than ourselves, even in the dark hours, even when it's not easy. And I think suicide places our needs above the needs of others. Now, again, I want to make this very clear. I'm not talking about terminally ill people. I'm not talking about extreme cases. I'm certainly not passing judgment on those of you who choose to end your life at your discretion. But generally speaking, this is my belief. You know, there's something that we all have to keep in mind. And I want those of you who consider suicide or may consider it someday, that, you know, most of us will never know the true impact that we've had on the world, that we've had on other people. We will never know that. Bill Gates, a guy like Bill Gates, certainly knows his impact on the world. I mean, he's very fortunate. But you got a lot of, for every Bill Gates, there's an Edgar Allan Poe, you know, who died, what, an alcoholic and half crazy and I believe destitute, or almost. We can't all be Elvis Presleys with, you know, the countries around the world, you know, praising us for our talents. If you're lucky, you'll be that way. But for most of us, for the everyday people, we don't really know, and we will never know the impact that we had on someone. And you gotta keep that in mind. And you must remember then that since you don't know It is wrong to assume that you've had no impact. I hope this makes sense. This is the kind of thing you have to think about when you're really seeking an exit, an easy out. Is that you don't know what you can do. It may be as much as stopping to ask someone how they're doing, when they, the other person, may be considering suicide. About 4 years ago, I got a phone call out of the blue from one of my aunts, and she told me she got her master's degree, I think it was. And she told me, and she and I hadn't spoken on anything like this, in years. She said, I just finished my master's degree, and I want you to know, Mark, that it's because of you. And I said, what do you mean? She said, I remember when you were in high school and all the, the way you handled your life. You didn't give up. You don't give in. You believe in something greater than yourself. And she said to me, I saw in you that if you could do it with the challenges that you have, what more can I do with so many less challenges than you? And that is what inspired me to go back to school and to finish what I started many, many, many years ago. And, that phone call, I was stunned. I was really surprised that I had such an impact. I would never have known this. Let's say 4 years ago. It may have been 2 years ago. Can't hold me to the dates. But I remember thinking it would have been a shame for me to have ended, ended my life, having never heard those words. And it would have been tragic for her if she had never had the chance to tell me. So you see, this is very important. You never know the true impact of your existence. And that means that you owe it to the world. You owe it to your family. You owe it to strangers. You owe it to everyone to keep going. Because you may, and I assume most likely will, have a profound impact on someone, even if you don't think so today. For those of you with disabilities and physical challenges, when people see you walk down the street or get on a bus and you have to have a cane, for those of you in wheelchairs, for all of those of you, and not just for physically disabled people, financially challenged people, when they see those of you who have three or four children and you have to work two or three jobs, and yet you keep going, you don't stop, it's an example. It means something to somebody. And you must always remember that you owe that to the world, because hopefully at some point in time, somebody will do something for you. Think about this. This is important. You can't let go. My ancestors were slaves in this country. And the United States. And whenever I watch Roots or read anything about slavery, I always think, what kept those people going? Why didn't they kill themselves? I mean, I'm sure some few of them did. But for the most part, they did not. Why? How could you be born into slavery, see other people enjoy rights that you would never have, be treated less than human, nothing more than chattel? What was it about them that kept going? Why? I've often wondered this. I mean, I'm just amazed, because I'm sure suicide crossed their minds. And I think it's because, I don't know, but I'd like to think the reason that they didn't kill themselves, for the most part, is because they knew that, or hoped that someday one of their children would make a difference for somebody, that they owed it to the world to raise children, to do something, to leave a legacy that would improve upon the previous generation. And that is what happened. Perhaps it's a romantic idea, but I think ultimately they valued their lives, even though they weren't, by our standards, any kind of way to live. Still, there was a value there. They owed something, either to help others deal with slavery, to help others get to Christ, if that's what they believed. But whatever it was, there was a greater responsibility to others than themselves. Because, think about it, if all you knew and cared about was yourself when you're in chains and shackles, the first chance you're going to get, you're going to exit, you're going to go. So there must have been something more. And I tell you what, that you have no idea how much joy that brings me, gratified that makes me to be part of such a legacy. I wouldn't trade it for anything in the world. For those of you who don't really value religion, you know, I and I'm saying this for those of you because my opinion, when people say, well, suicide is wrong because it goes against God, what that really says to me is that for people who believe in God or a greater power, I'm just going to use the term God generically here. Again, to me it means that they believe that there's a greater responsibility to the universe. You cannot be selfish. When people say God has a plan for you, or when they say, you know, God has a master plan, the universe has a master plan, that presupposes that we don't have control of that plan, and that we may not even understand that plan, but that we are in fact part of that plan. We are a link in a chain. And in order for that chain to survive, to be strong, we must play our part, no matter how large or small. And I think, to me, that is how I interpret those statements. And because I know people say, oh, it's against God. How do you know what God wants? It doesn't really matter. You can use God, universe, fill in the blank. But it all comes down to the fact that there is something greater than us. And that we are part of it. And that we should not take that for granted. I hope this makes sense. It does to me. So, for those of you who really are thinking about suicide, I mean, I'm not going to give you the standard answers. Call someone, talk to your friends, call a hotline. That's absolutely, we all know this. But I want you to give yourself 6 months. Set a date. 6 months. From the day that you start thinking about this. And say to yourself, if in that time I still feel the same way, then maybe, and I'm not suggesting at all that you go through with it, okay? I'm just saying that should be the first step. And then if you still feel that way, then I suggest, you know, talk to people. You know, don't just make a hasty decision. I'm not going to tell you that you're doing the wrong thing. By my standards, you are, but again, I don't want to pass judgment on you, because no one, unless you've walked in someone's shoes, you don't really know what they're going through. And think about those people who mean something to you. And remember that, you know, to commit suicide is cutting off a legacy. It's cutting off something that might have been, and I'm going to say is, a beautiful thing. Just because you can't see that beauty doesn't mean it doesn't exist. I hope that makes sense. I know this topic is not an easy topic to listen to. It may not have been easy for you to listen to. And I want you to know it's not exactly easy for me to talk about. But I really hope that you get the message I'm trying to send to you. Life is important. All life is important. And you're important. And even on the days, in the darkest hours, when you feel like you're not, believe me, you are. So, keep that in mind, okay? You're not alone. I've always said that. I mean it. You now know there's somebody out here who has gone through something and who has survived it. And to end the story about me, about 2 months, 3 months, I woke up one day and I'd been, you know, depressed. I'm going back to my story about my vision. I'd been really depressed. And I don't know how, but I was thinking, you know, making plans, really, of where I was going to do with the cats and all that. And then I went into my office. I hadn't touched my computer in about 2 months since I lost my vision. I just couldn't. It hurt too much to go in there and turn it on and not be able to see the screen. But I did. And I was very fortunate to have a screen reading program already installed. And I launched that program for the first time with the speech on. And I thought, you know, I can do this. I mean, for me, it happened in 2 seconds. For me, it happened in 2 seconds. I made a decision. I can do this. And I thought to myself, you know, for all my life, people have been telling me how talented I am, how resilient, how much of a, quote, go-getter I am. And I thought, now here's my chance to prove it. Really prove it. Prove it to myself, not just to other people. And once I made that, I don't want to say that decision, but once I realized that, hey, the computer can talk. It may be a little more difficult, but I can do this. It got to be a challenge. And I slowly began to climb back into the light. And once I realized that, then for me, suicide was no longer an option. And I got to tell you something. I would have missed some wonderful moments if I had done that back then. The last, what is it, 5 years, 6 years, haven't been exactly easy, but they have been some of the most rewarding of my entire existence, including producing this podcast show for all of you. Anyway, that's this show. I give you my contact information. You know my name is Mark Taylor. You can go to the website at www.candleshore.com. You can click on the Candleshore blog link there and hear the show. You can also subscribe to this podcast at feeds.feedburner.com. Again, there's links on the website for this. And you can also email me at musicman@candleshore, that's candleshore.com. Did I do the feed burner one? I think I did. I said that you can subscribe at feeds.feedburner.com/candleshore. Hey, I enjoyed talking to you. I hope you come back next week for another show. And remember to make a joyful noise this week, okay? Take care. Bye-bye.